Chapter 2. And of course your reputation precedes you, like an earthquake precedes a city drowning wave. The tremors of your arrival are already setting the ministry to vibration, as if we were all made of tiny strings and you were the bow. Of course we regret the absence of former Minister Nine Propulsion. Her guidance was a warm silk glove that has been taken off the palms now that she has retired, and so abruptly. But I, for one, look forward to having meetings with a person who was the first successful governor of Nakar system. We have work to do. I remain, in anticipation. Letter from 3rd Undersecretary 11 Laurel of the Ministry of War to the incoming Minister of War, 3 Azimuth, dated to the 21st day, 1st year in the 1st indiction of the Emperor of Altexcalan, 19 ads. Letters to the dead are poor practice. I do myself a service if I merely kept a journal, like half the emperors who have slept in this bed before me. But since when have you known me to do service to myself? And at least you are dead. Or it is simplest to think of you so now. I have all the stars in my hands, Iskander, and it is terribly easy to let them slip through a finger-width gap, especially when some of them are going dark, eaten up by your successor's so convenient alien threat. You slept here more often than I did, more often than I do, if we count sleeping and not nights. How often did you wish, for the convenience of narrative, to bow to your whims? More or less often than our emperor, awake beside you. The private notes of Her Brilliance the Emperor, 19 ads, undated, locked, and encrypted. Knife Point's captain, 30 wax seal, clutched his cup of coffee like it was the only thing keeping his hands from shaking. He was a nasty shade of gray all through. Nine Hibiscus thought of oatmeal congealed in the bottom of a pan, that leftover scrim of mealy gray-white that needed to be scraped off. "It's not language," he said for the second time. That had been his opening statement to her when she'd gotten him retrieved safely from his ship and had him brought to her smaller conference room to be debriefed. "I had 14 Spike with me. She speaks 5 languages. That's why I took her, in case we got to overhear something. And it was nothing like a language to her. It's not got parsable phonemes," she said. "That was before the enemy ship came out of nowhere and started chasing us. She didn't get much farther than, 'We can't make noises like that.'" "I am not equipped to run a first contact scenario," Nine Hibiscus thought, "especially when the things being contacted spit ship-dissolving fluids at my people and don't make understandable noises." She was a soldier, a strategically minded one with the vast punch of Tixkalanli power behind her, but a soldier nonetheless. First contact was for diplomats and people who got into epic poems. "If it's not language," she said, sipping at her coffee. 30 Waxseal drank a bit of his, mirroring, and she was glad of it. "How did you know it was communication at all?" "Because it didn't start until we showed up. And it was responsive, Yowlek. I mean, when I took Knife Point in closer, the transmission shifted. It sounded different. And when I backed us away, it changed again. And when I tried to slide around the far side of that dwarf sun and get eyes on what happened to our colony on Paloa 2, it shrieked at us. And then that ring ship was right there." The edge of hysteria in 30 Waxseal's voice was unsettling. It wasn't like him. He wouldn't be a scout gunner captain if he was prone to the horrors. The ring ship had been awful, and its spit had been worse, but still, it wouldn't do. "You got back, Captain," Nine Hibiscus said, even, reassuring. "You came home to us and you brought us an intercepted communique, and we know approximately 8 new things about these people than we did before today." She was using 20 cicadas language, but this captain didn't know that. Didn't know how rattled she was, and never would, if she was careful. "You did very well. You can stand down awaiting further orders unless there's anything else I should know." "No, sir. The recording is with Chief Communications Officer Tu Foam, if you want to listen to it. But there's nothing else specific. We didn't get close enough to Paloa 2 for actionable intelligence. Nine Hibiscus wanted to listen to the recording very badly, and the idea made her skin crawl at the same time. But she had another hour and three quarters before 16 Moonrise was scheduled to come aboard and discuss strategy. Discuss strategy. Such thin cover for a meeting meant to provide Nine Hibiscus with some leverage against 16 Moonrise's extremely untimely episode of fleet intrigue. And she would like all the information she could get, whether it was language or not. Beneath the Imperial Palace, there was a network of passages, secret and small. There was a poem for them, a good one with a walking rhythm to it. It went, as many roots in the ground as blooms into the sky, daylight servants of the Empire gather palace flowers, justice, science, information, war, but the roots that feed us are invisible and strong. Eight Antidote liked two parts of that poem best. How his feet hit the tunnel tilework floor, right along with the pulse of roots in the ground and blooms in the sky. And also how he wasn't a daylight servant at all. Daylight servants got palace flowers. Alone in the tunnels, Eight Antidote, sole heir to Taixkalon entire, just recently sole heir, which meant something, probably, something about how he needed to think about himself, didn't need flowers. He was down in the dirt, where silent things grew strong. He'd been in the tunnels tens of times, even before the Emperor. Not the current Emperor, but his ancestor the Emperor. It was important also to clarify these things in his mind. Had whisked him into them during the insurrection right before he died. He'd been in the tunnels enough to be beginning to know them. Their secret ways, their listening posts and open spy eyes. His ancestor the Emperor had shown him, and had let him go into them. It was one of the only things Six Direction had let him do, like it was a prize, a passcode between the two of them, an indulgence. Eight Antidote wondered a lot about why. He'd wondered that even before his ancestor had killed himself in a sun temple for the glory of Taixkalon. Here the tunnel narrowed, dipped left. It smelled of petrichor, rain and the underneath parts of flowers. Eight Antidote trailed his fingers along the wall, where it was damp with condensation, and imagined a small Six Direction, just his own 11 years old size, walking around under the palace exactly like this. He wouldn't have needed to duck through the narrow parts either, not when he was 11. If there were physical differences between Eight Antidote and his ancestor, he didn't know about them yet. 90% was a lot of clone to be, physically. Also, he'd seen hollows. But Six Direction hadn't grown up in the palace, had he? All those hollows came from some planet with grass on it. A kid with his own face 100 years ago. Green-gray plants up to his narrow chest. Six Direction had never been down here at all. Until later. After the narrow part, there were some stairs. A long climb in the dim. He knew the way now. Even lightless. In the past few weeks, he'd come up these stairs 7 times. Today was 8. He was too old to believe in numerical luck anymore, but 8s felt right even so. 8 times for luck, particular to him. Particular to him, and to everyone else who shared the glyph he used for the number sign in his name. So also lucky for the Minister of the Judiciary, who was technically his legal parent since she'd adopted him, and also tens of thousands of other kids. And this was why he didn't believe in numerical luck anymore. Not since he'd thought about it properly. There was a door in the ceiling at the end of these stairs. Eight Antidote knocked on it, and it opened up for him. And then he was in the basement of the Ministry of War. 11 Laurel was waiting for him there. He was tall, and the carved planes of his face were very dark, with deep wrinkles around the eyes and the mouth. He was wearing a Ministry of War uniform, which wasn't the same thing as a legionary uniform, but almost was. Not a suit, like every other ministry, but breeches and a gunmetal gray jacket that came down to the middle of his thighs and buttoned double-breasted with small, flat gold buttons. He never seemed to mind sitting in the ministry basement dust, waiting for 8 Antidote to show up. He just stood, brushed the dust off his pants unceremoniously, and said,
"And how are you this afternoon, Cure?"
There were a couple of things 8 Antidote had learned from his ancestor the Emperor, and a couple more from 19 Ads, who was Emperor now, and had promised to take care of him even if it killed her. The biggest one was probably, don't trust anyone who makes you feel good without knowing why they want you to feel that way. But 11 Laurel, who in addition to waiting for him in basements once a week and teaching him how to run a cartograph strategy table and shoot an energy pulse pistol, was the undersecretary of the Third Palm, one of 6 undersecretaries who only answered to the Minister of War. 11 Laurel called him Cure, not Your Excellency or Imperial Associate 8 Antidote, or anything else. And 8 Antidote really, truly loved it. At least, he thought he knew he loved it, which had to help. He loved it. 11 Laurel definitely wanted him to, and this might be a bad thing. But right now it wasn't. Right now he widened his eyes in a grin and scrambled out of the hole in the floor and said,
"I solved it, you know, last week's exercise, the one about Karan system."
"Did you?"
11 Laurel said.
"All right, show me what you think the fleet captain at Karan did to win that battle, and what it tells you about her. We can go to the cartograph straight off."
It bothered 8 Antidote, a faint kind of upset like a hum off in one corner of his mind, that 11 Laurel, a man who had served in 20 campaigns and seen more blood and star-drenched planets than he could easily imagine, spent an afternoon once a week entertaining an 11-year-old kid who had snuck in through the basement. There were extenuating circumstances, of course, the obvious one being that 8 Antidote was likely to be Emperor of all Tixkalan at some point, much more likely to be so than before Sixth Direction had sacrificed himself and named a sole successor in the process. The third undersecretary to the Minister of War, who might see himself minister in that hypothetical future, would have a lot of reasons to amuse that kid. Also, it wasn't like where they were was a secret. On the way to the cartograph room, one of a whole lot of them, the Ministry of War was a tactician's garden, 19 Ads had said that to him, and it stuck in his head. 8 Antidote and 11 Laurel passed in full view of at least 10 soldiers, 4 administrative staff, 1 floor cleaner, and 5 city eye cameras that 8 Antidote could spot. That probably meant there were 5 more he hadn't spotted on this route. He wasn't escaping. He wasn't doing anything secret. And neither was 11 Laurel. 19 Ads, her brilliance the Emperor, had said the Ministry of War is a tactician's garden, right after 8 Antidote had come back from his first trip through the tunnels. She'd come into his rooms alone and showed him the holograph recording the city had made of him, moving through the ministry like a bright bird in a net of eyes. He'd asked her if she'd prefer he not go, and she had said that line about tacticians and gardens and told him to do precisely what he liked and left again. Sometimes 8 Antidote wondered if anyone would ever trust him enough to not show him that they were watching him all the time. The cartograph room made him happy anyway, happy enough to shove the whole mess of why away for a little while. 11 Laurel called up Kuran system with a few sweeps of his hands, last week's exercise displayed in slow rotating lights hung in the middle of the air. Every ship in the fleet had one of these tables for solving problems before they happened. The problem here, how did the fleet captain at Kuran use only one ship to quell an uprising before it could spread past the southern tip of one continent? And the constraints. Less than 5,000 Kurani casualties, less than 200 Tixkalani ones. She didn't call for help. She had no unusual weaponry, not in the standard manifest, for a ship of that size. She was outnumbered 40-1,
and the Kurani rebels had seized the spaceport and were using Tixkalani's ships against her. Solve it. 8 Antidote loved the constraints best of all. Delimiters. This happened, so it must be possible. Solve it.
Go on, said 11 Laurel. Show me what Fleet Captain 9 Hibiscus of the 10th did here.
8 Antidote came up to the table. He called it to his attention with small movements of his eye behind his cloud hook, and carefully allowed the simulation to run forward without making any changes to what was, now functionally, his fleet. He stood in for 9 Hibiscus. And like he was almost sure she had done, he didn't send any of her shards down toward Kurran, not even when the Kurani rebels came floating up off the planet in their stolen Tixkalani ships. He paused it right as the stolen fleet entered firing range. Between all of them, they could have destroyed 9 Hibiscus's Wait for the Wheel, even though it was an Eternal-class flagship. There's only one solution I can find, he said, not looking at 11 Laurel, imagining instead that he was a war minister or a fleet captain himself, talking to his people, his troops.
Nobody fired at all.
How would that have happened?
Asked 11 Laurel, which wasn't, no, you're wrong. 8 Antidote didn't smile, but he felt very bright, very focused, like flying would feel, like being a shard pilot, tumbling on a vector of his own choosing. On Kurran, he went on, the rebellion was small, just one faction of one ethnic group, but they were smart enough to know that we keep a garrison on that southern continent, a lot of ships, enough to kill an Eternal if they had to. The rebels were very smart when they captured the port first instead of going after the provincial governor's offices. But there really weren't a whole lot of them, I think. Not enough to not take allies where they could get them.
Not implausible thinking.
11 Laurel was paying out the rope, 8 Antidote thought, giving him just enough space to get in trouble. But he wasn't going to get in trouble, because he was right. So the fleet captain, 9 Hibiscus, she's got this reputation. Her soldiers would do anything for her. And it's not just the every captain's soldiers love them thing, it's not just poetry. I looked up her prior campaigns, and her people will do a lot of, dumb shit, in my opinion, Undersecretary, if she asked them to. 11 Laurel made a noise that might have been laughter a few decades back.
You did look her up. I'd say dumb shit is a fair description. Yes. Go on. What sort of dumb shit did she get her soldiers to do at Kurran?
If she'd sent some of them down to infiltrate the rebels, said 8 Antidote, and she trusted that they'd succeeded, then I think she let the rebels take the stolen ships up into space, this close to her ship, and asked her own people to trust that they wouldn't fire while the coup went down, and the rebels got killed on the same ships they'd stolen. Nobody fired at all. They didn't need to. She'd already won. The cartograph went blank. 8 Antidote blinked, after images of Wait for the Wheel and Kurran's sun bright across the inside of his eyelids.
That's very close to right, said 11 Laurel. Well done.
What did I miss? 8 Antidote asked, because he couldn't help it. Very close wasn't good enough. Not what he'd come up with, they never fired in the middle of the night like a sunburst explosion of I know it, I see it. Woken up with it on his tongue like a bursting fruit.
Infiltration is part of fleet counterinsurgency protocols, yes, 11 Laurel said. But who should be in charge of it? Who makes that call, Cure, to send our people to lie for us?
Not a fleet captain?
The Minister of War, or the Undersecretary of the Third Palm.
You? The Third Palm, for the East Direction for. He struggled, reached for it. Palace East was where 19 ads had lived before she was emperor, where ambassadors stayed, where the information ministry was.
But the information ministry was civilians. 11 Laurel was waiting for him. 8 Antidote hated that. It made him feel like he was being indulged. He said, "You, third palm, because the third palm is what's left of the military part of information."
"Quite. Me, and the rump end of the separation of our spies from our soldiers. The third of 6 outreaching palms, intelligence, counterintelligence, and fleet internal affairs. Now, Cure, did R9 Hibiscus receive this authorization from me, or from Minister 3 Azimuth?" "Ah, no, it was still Minister 9 Propulsion then, but even so."
"No," 8 Antidote said. "She didn't have authorization to give that order, and her people did it anyway."
"You're going to make a hell of a tactician when you're the rest of the way grown,"
11 Laurel said, and 8 Antidote felt warm all through. He ducked his head, not wanting to blush.
"That's right. She didn't get permission, she just decided. And none of her people asked a single question about it."
The blankness of the cartograph table felt abruptly heavy, threatening. "Where is she now?" 8 Antidote asked. "What happened to her after Kuran?"
"Oh, we made her Yautlek,"
11 Laurel said, as if this was something that happened every day.
"And sent her out to die bravely for Takes Kalan and her brilliance the Emperor as quickly as possible."
It took a particularly vicious sort of self-recrimination for Mahit to wish herself alone inside her own mind. Alone like she'd been as a child, imago-less and longing. Instead of replete with memories that were only beginning to belong to her, and were doubled and distorted and full of Takes Kalan anyhow. A particularly vicious sort of self-recrimination that also involved lying on the bed in her egg-shaped residence pod and staring at the comforting off-white curve of the ceiling, as blankly as possible while not thinking about how completely fucked she was. Having whole hours to contemplate her degree of fuckedness was a luxury. Back in the city, she'd never had time to sit with the dawning horror of revelation. She kept moving. She'd had to. The ceiling was very nice and very LaSalle, and no one could look at her in here. She'd set all her tail lights on the outside of the pod to privacy, emergency only.
"You're going to have to come out of the pod eventually," said Yiskander,
and Mahit felt nothing so much as that she was being reprimanded by a parent or a creche carer. "You'll have to go to bed eventually, Mahit." "I could wait a week," she said, quite out loud. No one could hear her in here. No one could notice how she wasn't one integrated person, but a suspect, secret, virulent merge of 3. "And then steal a shuttle, and try to make the Unhamamate gate, before the counselor noticed I missed my appointment, and yes, this is a stupid idea, and no, I won't do it, and if I was going to betray LaSalle's interest for your sake, Yiskander, I would have done it back in the Empire."
"How about for yours? What do you think Amnarbat is going to do to us when she finds out what we are?"
"That depends," Mahit thought at him. "Did she sabotage us the first time? And if so, why did she? You knew her, Yiskander. You have more time, more years than I do."
"In her office, you were sure she'd done the sabotage."
"In her office, I was scared." There was a waiting sort of silence, an abeyance that wasn't acknowledgement as much as it was frustration, and Mahit was so tired of not thinking half of her own thoughts. "Are you happy now, Yiskander? I was frightened, and you were spilling trauma reaction all over my endocrine system. Of course I was sure Amnarbat had sabotaged us right then. And now I'm alone, and I can think, and I can't just work with I was scared. I have to—"
"Mahit," Yiskander said, very gentle in her mind. "We were scared together. It's all right. Breathe."
She took a breath. It came short, and she realized she'd been breathing in little fast, useless inhalations for at least a minute and hadn't really noticed when she'd started. She took another, and it was still so hard to breathe like her lungs weren't going to seize up, like she wasn't trapped. She was trapped, even in the safety of her private pod. She was absolutely trapped. The counselor for Heritage wanted to carve her open, and she still... Months later. And she still didn't understand why Amnarbat would have tried to sabotage her, or how, or anything, and... She breathed. Deep. A circular breath through the nostrils and the mouth. It wasn't her choice, but she knew, or Yaskander knew, the pattern of it. The calming way of breathing. He took over their body entirely so rarely, only when he needed to. The last time, the last real time, he'd run them through a riot unscathed, with all of the city in conflagration around them.
There, Yaskander said, and then, really, oxygen is helpful for clarity of thought.
A snatch of that bright rag of a man, the remains of her first imago, the sabotaged Yaskander, who never remembered his own dying, who only remembered decades of anticipated life in Teixkalan to come, and a vast ambition, and a cleverness Mahit wanted to own, to inhabit, to allow into herself.
Thank you.
Warmth. All the little hairs on her arms and legs standing up and lying down again in a shivery wave, like her own neurology was touching her gently. This, too, was in none of the imago training, none of the expectations for what would happen after a person received a live memory and a line of experience to be part of. Nothing in Mahit's education had told her about the strange kindnesses of living in a body with a friend.
Sentimentality is not helpful for clarity of thought, said Yaskander.
An intensely annoying friend. Electric laughter and that vicious spike of ulnar nerve pain. It wasn't always a shimmer, now. Sometimes it just hurt.
So we're scared, and we're trapped. And since you're not planning on abandoning station like the hero of some graphic story like the one you bought, what are we going to do, Mahit?
She sat up, pressed her spine against the comforting inward curve of her pod. What we should have done when we first got back, Yaskander. I think we should tell Dekakel Onchu that her messages for you didn't go unread entirely. Again, she felt alive, awake, in a way she hadn't seemed to be ever since she'd come back to LaSalle. Awake was close to frightened. And exhilarating. There were remarkable similarities between how her aptitudes and Yaskander's had spelled for risk-seeking. She'd always assumed that had been a necessary precondition for the sort of xenophilia that made a person fall in love with a culture that was slowly eating her own. But perhaps it was something simpler, something gut-deep. I can't leave anything well enough alone.
Ah. So you've decided to be political after all, said Yaskander,
so close in tone to her own thoughts that there was hardly any space between imago and inheritor, an intimation of future blur. One of her own memories being echoed, 12 Azalea in her ambassadorial apartment back in the city, before anything had begun to go truly wrong, before she'd gotten him killed, saying to her,
So you've decided to be political after all.
Petal, she thought, with fond grief. Not what she'd called him, that had been Three Seagrass's pet name for a man named for a pink extravagance of a flower. Yes, I guess I have. It wasn't language. Knife Point's captain had been right about that much. The recording they'd made from the intercepted enemy ship transmissions could have just been bad static feedback. Cosmic radiation interference jacked up into a sharp crackle. At least to 9 hibiscuses in experienced ears. A sharp, ugly noise, with the intimation of a headache inside it, that ended in a scream that had taste. A foul, oil-slick, tongue-coating taste that made her nauseated. Synesthesia wasn't in 9 Hibiscus's usual suite of neurological oddities, and sound that made humans crosswire to taste was at best unpleasant and at worst actively harmful. Nevertheless, she listened to it twice, confirming for herself that Knife Point had been right about the pauses in the crackling. Even if this wasn't language, it was responsive to what Knife Point had done. So it was communication, of one sort or another. She made 20 Cicada join her for the third time through. When the noise skittered higher and louder, he winced and put his hand over his mouth, swallowing a gag. He'd always been more sensitive than Nine Hibiscus was to local environments. She wished, abrupt and useless, that she hadn't made him hear this.
"I can't,"
he said once he'd gotten control of himself again. "Imagine that their mouths are very pleasantly shaped, if they talk like that." Nine Hibiscus shrugged, one shoulder up and down again. "They could be using a distorter. Or this is machine communication, one ship to another.
Or they could be machines communicating."
She wondered if 20 Cicada would find that comforting. Machines that accidentally talked in a way that disturbed human homeostasis, rather than something organic that could hurt other organic things by speaking. If she wasn't so short on time, shorter now with 16 Moonrise due in an hour for a strategic diffusing of politics over dinner, she'd ask him about it. "I doubt it," she said instead. "The spit that ate the shard. See, I'm already calling it spit. Too organic. They're not machines." 20 Cicada said, "You don't know that." And she nodded. "I don't know anything. We need a linguist. Who have we got on board for translation?" 20 Cicada leaned back in his chair, laced his hands behind the smooth dome of his head, and dipped his eyelids shut, consulting with the internal lexicon of personnel he seemed to always have easy memory of.
"Kukwelihui, 14 Spike. That's who was on Knife Point, but she is a translator, not a linguist. Outer Rim languages. One of your spy types. She was on the ground team at Kuran. Clever, but better with humans than whatever this is, I think."
"Not her," Nine Hibiscus said. "I need someone without any preconceptions, who hasn't heard the transmission before." 14 Spike was one of her spy types. Not spies. She didn't have spies unless Swarm himself counted. Third Palmers, political officers in common parlance, the Ministry of War's intelligence branch, weren't the sort of people that a fleet captain kept around on purpose. 14 Spike was just one of her soldiers, who she'd picked out for quiet charisma, language skills, the ability to become indispensable to anyone they were near. Usually someone of Kukwelihui rank, not command track, but the highest level of non-officer specialist soldier. Someone flexible enough for independent work, strong enough to keep their loyalties regardless, like a metal that didn't go brittle when bent. Sometimes people like that could talk to barbarians so well that the barbarians forgot they were Texcalanitzlem until it was too late for the barbarians. 14 Spike was for barbarians, not aliens, not something that not only wasn't civilized, but wasn't even human. "Who else?"
"I could pull up the rest of the Kuran team."
"I don't want someone who can make people trust them, Swarm. I want someone who can talk to aliens without mouths." 20 Cicada covered his mouth again, but this time it was to hide a snicker.
"Not you then either, my Yautlek. Only people trust you."
Her people trusted her. Yes, the 10th Legion trusted her, would die for her like she'd die for them. That was a captain's bargain. The rest of this fleet? Not yet. Not with 16 Moonrise and her letter of political discontent already working its way through the other legions. Nine Hibiscus couldn't pull translators from some other legion's contingent. She was almost sure. Not without knowing 16 Moonrise's business, and how far it might have spread. She hated working on fractured ground, without the comfort of the Minister of War to contact as a last resort. But perhaps she'd grown too used to having that comfort. Perhaps it was time to learn what sort of Yautlek she'd like to be remembered as, in her own right. "This," she said at last, sitting down next to 20 Cicada like they were both still palest leaf-green cadets, shoulder to shoulder, "is a job for the Information Ministry."